Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. And we're back on Divine Intervention, and I think I'm right in saying this is the first time in a year and a half or so that we've been doing these podcasts that we are trying something that was not produced in the Cape. It's always worthwhile occasionally benchmarking our own South African products against those from elsewhere in the world, and our food and wine guru, Michael Olivier, decided this week that we should try a couple of Italian wines. There's a white and a red, and my Italian is so bad that's about all I can tell you about them. Michael, great to chat to you again. Before I bring you in, I'll just remind you of our studio guests for this evening. We have Dwayne Newman from Cova Advisory.
Pardon.
We have Interbrand Sampson's Jeremy Sampson.
Hi, John.
Who's sometimes the boss and sometimes the chairman, and I don't know, do you make the coffee as well?
Oh, I clean the everything.
Oh, excellent. Well, watch out for Ebola. And last, but certainly not least, Sonko's son's group sommelier, Miguel Chan. Miguel,
hi, John.
Great to have you back again.
Thank you for
having me. That's enough waffle from me. Michael, tell us what these wines are called, and then I think we'll start with the white. Tell us what you think of it.
Okay, well, the white both the wines are from a cellar called Zaccanini. The white is Il Bianco di Siccio. It is a blend of 80% Trebbiano and 20% Chardonnay. Sort of elegant, light, dry wine. I think what they've done is, again, they've done some soft pressing there. They've had a 12-hour on-skin maceration, and then they inoculate the fermentation, which takes place partly in wood, which is Slovenian oak, interestingly, and then partly in stainless steel tank. So what you have is this sort of almost sort of yellow-colored wine with some green flashing around the edges. Quite a gentle bouquet. I can certainly get the Chardonnay there, and it was a quite nice aromatic stuff, pleasant, and then this really, really nice. I love the taste of this wine. It's sort of crisp, it's fresh, and it ends very nicely.
As did you, Michael. As did you. I detect quite a lot of lemon. Am I being bizarre here? It tastes a bit lemony, as if somebody's put lemon in it rather than grapes. as well as grapes. Okay, well, that stunned Michael into another rapid conclusion. So I shall move on to Dwayne Newman. Dwayne, we South Africans tend to drink our own wine because it's so damn good, but it is occasionally worthwhile taking our palates overseas. What do you make of this Italian white?
Yeah, I mean, I probably agree with a bit of your comments, John. I mean, it's got a bit of lemony, a bit of a bittery taste. Yeah, I can definitely taste the Chardonnay in it. It's obviously a bit more complex than a Sauvignon Blanc for my tastes. But I'm actually enjoying it. It's something I would think of trying.
Well, you just did. Jeremy.
It's very different. And I must say, if we were blind tasting it, I wouldn't quite know where it's from. Quite light. You know, it's 11.5%. Quite fruity. Very nice aftertaste. And you know, this is where, when I hear Slovenian oak, I was being told a little while ago about the different oaks around the world and the different flavours they impart. And it's quite interesting. So actually very enjoyable. I could visualise being in Florence or somewhere like that with a nice pizza and a couple of glasses of this.
Does your wife know about Florence? Miguel, I shall move rapidly
on. Yes.
Your thoughts?
I thought, look, it's a lovely dry white wine. There is lots of lemony character, as you say it so well. And at 11.5 alcohol, as Jerry said so well, it's a type of wine where you have four bottles for lunch, then you realize if you need to have a fifth bottle of red or something else. But it's seriously food friendly. Perfect on a Sunday afternoon or by the poolside. It's well made. It's good. Yeah.
Miguel makes a point, Michael, that I think has been debated quite heavily, particularly when overseas wine tasters and critics are looking at South African wines. our wines seem to be creeping up the scale in alcohol a bit. Am I right there?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're creeping up the scale, but I think some of them are pretty high. I think, you know, it's when you go to Europe and you're in Portugal, I mean, I've had wines that like sort of 8 to 9%, and then as Miguel says, when you've had the fourth bottle for lunch, you're looking for a bottle of red as well. But yeah, I think our wines tend to be higher in alcohol than European wines.
Is that a bad thing, Miguel?
Well, it's reflective of our climate. Remember, it's a sunny. We have lots of sunshine, and it's reflective of the ripeness of the variety. And also, we have a lot of what we call now a new planting material, virus free. And these are vines that are producing the goods. They are ripening the grapes as it should be. And ultimately, you have the resultant alcohol.
Well, before we move on to the red, Jeremy, you wanted to come in.
Yeah, just to carry on what Miguel was saying, I think with global warming, it is actually going to increase the alcohol levels. That's one of the things that comes with greater heat. That's why I think so many people in the Cape, but not just in the Cape now, are looking for cooler areas where they can grow grapes. Now, when one hears of award-winning wines being produced at Sutherland, which is the coldest place just about in the Western Cape, it's quite amazing. So climate is having a big impact.
You've just turned me into a global warming advocate, Jeremy. Thank you very much indeed. Michael, tell us about the red.
The red is a Montepulciano. The grapes Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, again this has had 4 months in Slovenian oak. I don't know about what Miguel might say, but I find this sort of quite sort of Shirazy in character. It's got the sort of the plums and the sort of ripe elderberries, and it's got that sort of Italian leather and sort of fynbos herbs and vanilla going on there. I like this wine. It's full bodied. It's quite a sort of robust wine, and it's a sort of wine that you want to have some really some good Italian food with, like ossobuco, or if you want to do pasta, you could perhaps do a puttanesca or something like that. But or pasta with really nice sausages in it. I think this is a great glass, and again, not that high in alcohol at 12.5%.
I'm really enjoying it, Michael. I like it a lot. Maybe I would have chilled it a bit more than we have for this particular tasting, but then I do tend to drink my red wines a lot colder than the average South African. Interesting that you detected leather notes. It reminds me, I was at the Absa Champagne Festival at Summer Place a week or two back, and there was a gentleman wandering around with a lady's leather shoe into which he was encouraging people to pour champagne so that he could drink it. Now, if you really want a leathery taste in your wine, I suppose that's quite a good way to do it.
Absolutely.
As an aside, Miguel, tell us what you think. Pleasant surprise?
Yeah, I agree with what Michael said. It is quite Shiraz in texture and in profile, but it is typical of the Montepulciano grape, which is a variety that have relatively low acid, tend to produce quite juicy, almost chewy kind of red fruit. It's mousy, it's quite gamey in profile, and that type of wine I would definitely seek out, served slightly chill with a roasted venison and just some jus with it. Keep it simple, and it's ideal.
I'm thinking pizza. I think this would go really nicely with a pizza with salami, sausage, all sorts of meat on top. Yeah. I think that would be a great pairing. But obviously, it's not the only one. A spaghetti bolognese, and as you say, something not too complicated, but with a robust flavour. This would match it well. Dwayne.
Yeah, I mean, John, I think I was struggling to place it, to be really honest.
It's in your glass, Dwayne.
Yes, I haven't been drinking so much today, but I think I smell the taste of vanilla in this, which I find quite an interesting flavour to be in a wine for my taste, but I find it quite enjoyable and just something different.
Michael, vanilla might come from oak barrels.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so it's not someone hasn't been pouring vanilla essence in on the sly. This is a deliberate policy by the winemaker to add that particular taste.
Yeah, I think oak has a natural vanillin content, and I think if you're toasting your oak barrels, you tend to caramelize the sugar in the oak, and then of course that vanilla becomes a bit more prominent. Not so, Miguel?
Yeah, correct. Vanillin is a character that's derived from the toasting of the oak. It's a byproduct of toasting.
Jeremy Sampson, last but not youngest, what do you make of this?
John, I'm still thinking about leather, and I'm thinking about...
All right. We're on wine now, Jeremy, not bondage.
The sound of leather on oak, and as this is a family programme and evening programme, I'm just talking cricket, John, so I can see you're thinking of other things. But it's very pleasant.
We'll always have drinking.
You could drink this with just about anything. It would fit beautifully, but as you say, a tad colder. And back to your whole thing about red wines, a little bit colder, please.
And Miguel, just to sum up our first foray out of South Africa in our series of wine tasting podcasts, the world of wine is massive. Somebody like you does it as a full-time job.
It's massive and it's wild. Just to think of Italy alone, Italy have 3,000 indigenous grape variety. Just think about it. We deal with probably 30 varieties that we see every day here in this country, but they have 3,000 indigenous varieties. So anyone with wine interest should seek out the diversity and experiment and be adventurous. It's a wonderful world out there.
And of course, a tradition dating back to the Romans. Sorry, I'm on orgies again, Jeremy. I do apologize. Michael, Olivier, just go back to that. Justify yourself. Why, for the first time, are we tasting an Italian wine?
Well, because I know the guys who import this wine, and I have tasted it before and enjoyed it, and I just thought it would be quite fun to do something different.
Well, I think it is, and congratulations, because I think all of us around the tasting table in Joburg have enjoyed both of these wines. Certainly there's something to be said for something a little different to what you're used to, and I'm not saying we're moving from a comfort zone, we're moving to another zone of comfort. Unfortunately, though, we're going to have to move to silence, because once again we've run out of time for our podcast recording. So many thanks once again to Michael Olivier. Michael, you are, as usual, a star. Many thanks for introducing me to two wines I didn't know much about. I look forward to polishing off the dregs later in the day.
Thanks, John.
And in our Joburg studio, Dwayne Newman, thank you very much for joining us again.
Thanks, John.
Jeremy Sampson.
Cheers, John.
And Miguel Chen.
Thanks, John.
I'm John Fraser, and this has been a Divine Intervention. What a brilliant Italian accent.